Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
It's October 12th, 1978, in New York City. Detective Gerald Thomas of the NYPD steps out of the bustling Manhattan streets and into the Chelsea Hotel. The building has a reputation as a popular destination for actors and artists, but this morning, it's about to hit the headlines for all the wrong reasons. Detective Thomas walks over to the first floor hallway, where he sees a young man sitting on the floor, guarded by several uniformed officers. The suspect has dark, spiky hair, a pasty white face, and a glazed, faraway look. Detective Thomas ignores him for now and heads into room 100. The place looks like it hasn't been cleaned in weeks. Clothes are strewn on the floor, empty glasses are scattered across the table, and all over are overflowing ashtrays. Detective Thomas walks over to the bedroom, where a photographer captures images of a body laying inside. The deceased is a young woman, maybe around 20 years old. She slumped against the wall like a marionette with its strings cut. She could even be mistaken for being asleep if it wasn't for the bloom of blood on her shirt. Detective Thomas gives the bedroom another quick scan, and his eyes settle quickly on a knife, its blade 5 or 6 inches long. It looks clean, but his gut tells him he must have just found the murder weapon. He bags up the knife and heads back out to the hallway. As investigators search the apartment, collecting more evidence, Detective Thomas begins to question the suspect. The 21-year-old gives his name as John Ritchie, although the world knows him by another name, Sid Vicious, bass player in the punk band The Sex Pistols. Sid says the woman in the bathroom is his girlfriend, Nancy. When asked what happened to her, he simply tells Detective Thomas that he doesn't know. He recalls seeing Nancy playing with a knife around 1 a.m., The next thing he remembers is waking up, stumbling into the bathroom, and seeing her body propped against the wall. Detective Thomas is unconvinced. He instructs Sid to stand up, and then he cuffs the musician, reading him his rights on their way out of the hotel. With the arrest of Sid Vicious, the murder of Nancy Spungen will seem like an open and shut case. Police will waste no time in charging the punk rock star with murder, saddling Sid with the possibility of life behind bars. But the musician will never be convicted. In fact, he'll never go to trial at all. A long-time drug addict, Sid often predicted that he would die young. And sadly for him, this prophecy will come true. 4 months after his arrest, Sid will die of a drug overdose, leaving many questions unanswered as to how Nancy Spungen ended up dead on October 12, 1978. From Noiser and Airship, I'm Lindsey Graham, and this is History Daily. History is made every day. On this podcast, every day, we tell the true stories of the people and events that shaped our world. Today is October 12, 1978, the arrest of Sid Vicious. It's June 29, 1976, inside the 100 Club in London, England. Punk rock is washing across the UK like a wave, and riding it front and center are the Sex Pistols. As the band takes the stage, the packed venue erupts.
Among those watching from the dance floor is 19-year-old Sid Vicious. But Sid is no ordinary fan. He's known the group's lead singer, Johnny Rotten, since the two met at school several years ago. Sid's real name is John Ritchie, but Johnny Rotten rechristened him last year, naming him after his own pet hamster, Sid. As the gig starts, Sid struggles to see past taller members of the crowd. He starts jumping up and down to get a better look, and as he bobs to the music, he notices a face he recognizes. In the crowd in front of him is music journalist Nick Kent. Nick is an old friend of the band's manager and even used to hang around and play guitar with the Sex Pistols. But tonight, Sid has it out for Nick. It's not clear why. Perhaps it's the drugs he took earlier this evening, although later some will suggest Nick kept blocking Sid's view of the stage. Whatever the reason, Sid produces a bike chain from his pocket and lashes the journalist across the head, blood splattering the stage. The assault makes headlines the following day, but no charges are filed. So Sid carries on with his life like it never happened, following the Sex Pistols from gig to gig, wondering what it would be like to be on stage with them, looking out at a sea of adoring faces. As it turns out, he only has to wait 9 months to find out. In February 1977, the Sex Pistols manager kicks their bass player out of the band. Sid is picked as his replacement, thanks more to his connection with Johnny Rotten than his musical talent. And 1 month after Sid joins the band, they sign a new deal with A&M Records. They mark the occasion by doing a photo shoot, signing their contracts and flashing peace signs outside Buckingham Palace. After policemen remove them from the premises, the band heads over to A&M Records headquarters. And as an after-party gets underway, the group turns chaotic, trashing the office while hurling abuse at staff. Their rowdy behavior continues when they disappear to a private party in a nearby club. A drink and drug-fueled bar fight ensues, and at one point, Sid jams a broken bottle into the face of a BBC recording engineer. The band's violent antics have consequences. Within a week of their signing, the Sex Pistols are dropped by A&M Records, and the UK-based network Capital Radio bans the group's music from their stations. But Sid and his bandmates don't seem affected by the controversy or loss of contract. Their unruliness only feeds into their image as icons of punk, and they still have plenty of fans when they play their next gig a few weeks later. It's at this show that Sid makes his debut on stage, and it quickly becomes apparent that there's a problem with Sid's rock star dream. He's not that great of a bass player. He's nowhere near as proficient as the man he replaced. But this doesn't seem to bother Sid, who has bigger issues to deal with. Just a few days after his first gig, Sid is hospitalized with hepatitis, likely contracted due to his drug use. He misses most of the band's rehearsals that month, and as the group records their debut album, it's actually guitarist Steve Jones, not Sid, who plays bass on the tracks. It's a chaotic start to life as a Sex Pistol, but within the mayhem, Sid finds something he's long searched for, an identity. Raised by a drug-addicted single mother, Sid has faced an uphill battle to find his place in the world almost from the moment he was born. Many who know him describe him as soft and shy, but with a penchant for erratic and often violent behavior, too. This contrast between his larger-than-life public persona and his offstage battle with his own demons is one that will follow him throughout the rest of his short life. As a Sex Pistol, Sid finds a mask he can wear, a role to play, one that will eventually overwhelm him and those closest to him, including Nancy Spungen. She's something of a groupie on the punk scene, and like Sid, a frequent drug user. And together, the pair will fall into a downward spiral that will lead both down tragic paths to an early death.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel, or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
It's Friday, May 13th, 1977. Bass player Sid Vicious watches as his bandmates take turns scrawling their names at the bottom of yet another new contract. One of them hands the pen to Sid, who follows suit. And when he's done, the four men share a sly smile. Superstitious folks may see today, Friday the 13th, an unlucky date, but it feels quite the opposite for the Sex Pistols. Only 2 months after being dropped by A&M Records, they're signing with Virgin Records, an independent label founded by future billionaire Richard Branson. And a new deal isn't the only thing Sid has acquired recently. After he lays down his pen, Sid walks across the room and puts an arm around his new American girlfriend, Nancy Spungen. A little over a month ago, the two met in a bar. They hit it off straight away, drawn together by a shared love of punk rock and addiction to drugs. They've been together ever since. On the surface, the two seem quite different. Many around Sid see him as shy, despite his Pistols persona. Nancy, by contrast, is loud and brash and used to getting what she wants. And now that she has Sid, she intends to enjoy the high life. In Nancy, Sid has found the spark that's bringing his love affair with narcotics to a new level. She, too, has used drugs, mainly heroin, as a crutch for years. And back home in the States, Nancy has a talent for procuring drugs for herself and the bands she follows. Her time with Sid is no different. But their relationship isn't purely based on a mutual dependency on drugs. Those who move in the same circles as Sid and Nancy see genuine moments of love and affection between them. But while Sid takes Nancy almost everywhere he goes, not everyone feels the same warm feelings for her that Sid does. Many feel she exerts too much influence over him. There are parallels whispered, comparing Nancy's grip on Sid to the way Yoko Ono is reported to hold sway over John Lennon. Perhaps most crucially, Nancy isn't popular with the other band members. Sid's increasingly erratic behavior, thanks in no part to his drug use, is wearing their patience thin, and they blame Nancy. But despite the group's inner turmoil, their popularity is soaring. In July, with Nancy in tow, Sid and the Pistols set off on a European tour that sees them play across Scandinavia, the Netherlands, and the UK. Their debut album is released in October, and it goes straight to number one on the UK charts. It will remain in the top 75 for almost a year. But even their stellar success can't ease the undercurrent of resentment from the rest of the band towards Nancy. The tension grows so bad that when a U.S. tour is booked for 1978, the band puts their collective foot down. Nancy is not invited to join them on tour. The hope is that some time apart will give Sid the chance to curb his drug use, to stop the downward spiral before it becomes unrecoverable. Sid reluctantly agrees to their demands and tries to clean up his act. But going cold turkey from both heroin and Nancy is a challenge he's not up for. Whether it's being apart from his girlfriend or having to make do with methadone in an attempt to kick the heroin, Sid's behavior deteriorates quickly. At one show in Texas, he clubs an audience member over the head with his bass guitar. At another, just 2 days later, he appears on stage with the words "Gimme a Fix" carved into his chest by a razor and blood smeared across his skin. The stress of touring builds like a pressure cooker, right up until their final gig in San Francisco. Ahead of that show, lead singer Johnny Rotten comes down with the flu. Meanwhile, Sid manages to locate a supply of heroin and is barely in any state to perform. But they do, and it's the group's last concert together. The next day, Johnny quits. As the Sex Pistols implode, Sid flies solo to New York. But after taking a potentially lethal mix of Valium and methadone, he slips into a coma while on board his flight. Paramedics are waiting for the plane when it touches down at JFK Airport, and Sid is rushed to a nearby hospital. But the near-death experience fails to be a wake-up call for Sid. Without his bandmates or his family members to turn to, when Sid is well enough to be discharged, he runs straight back to Nancy and to the roller coaster life of addiction they share. Eventually, the couple will take a room in the Chelsea Hotel in Manhattan. This accommodation will become their home for 2 months, a place to get high and escape from the world, until one fateful night when reality will force its way back in.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel, or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
It's 3:15 a.m. on October 12, 1978 at the Chelsea Hotel. 29-year-old actor Rocket's Red Glare knocks on the door of room 100. He smiles as the door opens and Nancy Spungen's face appears. Rockets is a friend of hers and her boyfriend Sid Vicious. He's also an occasional drug dealer, which is why Nancy has called him here at such an early hour. Nancy steps back, beckoning Rockets inside. She smiles as she greets him, but her grin doesn't last long, because Rockets informs her that he hasn't been able to find the drugs she's been asking for. Nancy brandishes wads of $50 and $100 bills, imploring Rockets to go back out and try again. Rockets shakes his head. But instead of leaving, he decides to hang out with Sid and Nancy for a while. He notes that Nancy is a little drowsy from whatever she took earlier in the evening, but Sid has taken it to another level. Later accounts will reveal that Sid has already consumed a potentially lethal dose of a sedative, a dose that could kill a person less accustomed to this level of drug abuse. And while Sid doesn't look near death, he does look to Rockets like he's on the verge of passing out, and the drug dealer is grateful that he didn't bring anything else for the couple to take. For a few hours, Rockets makes himself comfortable, chatting and drinking. And by the time he leaves room 100, it's around 5 in the morning. As he walks through the lobby, Rockets sees another familiar face saunter past him and head to the elevator. It's a man he knows as one of Sid and Nancy's regular dealers, but Rocket thinks little of it as he heads out into the crisp early morning air. What happens over the next few hours will be the subject of speculation for years to come. Opinions over Sid's guilt and Nancy's death will be divided, both in the press and among friends. The police will say it's an open and shut murder case. Others will point to alternative suspects, such as the drug dealer that Rocket saw entering the building, or even Rocket's Red Glare himself. Some will even entertain the idea of a botched double suicide. But what's indisputable is that by 11:30 a.m., Nancy will lie dead in her bathroom from a stab wound, and after calling the cops, Sid will become the main suspect in her killing. Upon investigation, the knife used to kill Nancy will appear to belong to Sid, whose story will change several times over the coming weeks. At various points, Sid will claim that he stabbed Nancy, but without intent to kill, that Nancy fell on the knife, and that he can't remember the incident at all. After his arrest, Sid will be released on bail. A short while later, he'll land himself back in jail for assaulting the brother of singer-songwriter Patti Smith. But after 7 weeks behind bars, Sid will make bail again. But that very night, at a party celebrating his release, Sid will overdose on heroin and die at the age of 21 before ever going to trial. With their prime suspect dead, police will drop Nancy Spungen's murder case, leaving many to still speculate about what really happened inside Room 100 on October 12, 1978. Next on History Daily, October 13, 1972. A plane carrying an Uruguayan rugby team crashes in the Andes Mountains, triggering a desperate fight for survival. From Noiser and Airship, this is History Daily, hosted, edited, and executive produced by me, Lindsey Graham. Audio editing by Mohammed Shazi. Sound design by Molly Bach. Music by Lindsey Graham. This episode is written and researched by Rob Scragg. Executive producers are Alexandra Curry Buckner for Airship and Pascal Hughes for Noiser.